Accession number 30342, reel 8.
Well, you see, I'm jumping the gun now talking about that, because when I finally got back, having been abroad and things like that, I was in Aldershot, and I went to this dance hall thing, because I could hardly dance, but I had a bit of a patter. And this officer girl, very attractive girl, she come along, we got shot in the hall, and we got on quite well. She said, she had a drink, I had a drink, and of course the RSM come in. Now, I didn't know this RSM at all, and he comes straight across to her, and she says, oh, she says, hello, Jack, or whatever his name was, this is Mac, I've just met you, he's a nice chap and all that, you know. So I introduced me to him, so I shook his hand, he says, Echo, the boys like that. No, I said, okay, okay. She said, is that going on here? Oh, yes, I said, I've got to go. And you wouldn't have nicely if I stayed there, it would have been suicide. So I just went away. And I was upset about that, because they were getting quite well. Pretty good, officer, and all that, and I thought, oh, great, isn't it? But when he took me to go, I went smartly.
Now, you mentioned previously, Sergeant Greaves and his kind of like,
oh, yeah,
double kind of action. You know, he was a friend, but he was a sergeant as well. Now, when you're at Rye, were there any kind of places that were like out of bounds to private soldiers? Were there any pubs that you couldn't go to, or any places where you felt, well, I better not go there because the sergeants will be there, or the officers will be there?
Well, yeah, if you do that, there's sergeants and that, you know, or the officers will be going to be there. They give them wide berth, like, you know, because they were probably in a different room anyway, you know, and you had to behave yourself with that, of course. And I remember one time, before we went abroad, the car we talk about, we had a few drinks one time, and we had quite a distance to walk back to Camber, that's where we were, Camber then, and he tried to get a horse to take him back, and he couldn't get on the horse.
Where did he get the horse from?
It must be in some field not long ago, and of course, he got the horse, but he must have had some razors with him, and he brought the horse back to camp. He didn't ride it at all. And of course, we just left the horse there, and we went to bed, woke up the next morning, and we're all on parade again, and there's this horse there. And we're asking who brought the horse in? Nobody knew. Yeah. So I don't know what happened to the poor horse at all. We never rode it, or he didn't ride it either. We just dragged it along and left the horse there. Like, yeah.
Now, obviously the kind of rumour mill, you realised that you probably would be going abroad.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned that there was this man with a self-inflicted wound. Were there any other? Can you remember anything else about people maybe pulling strings, trying not to go away?
Well, there was a couple of lads of Jewish religion, I suppose, and they didn't want to go, and were offering money to get changed places with them. They got some guys to change places, but I didn't know the people. Really.
How would you change places, or how would that work?
Well, I don't know how it worked, like, but the ones that didn't want to go, they got guys to volunteer in their place. And I don't know how it worked. I really don't, but they did that.
A couple of the other B Company veterans that I've spoken to have talked about CSM Etherington pulling strings the opposite way, that he was like too old to go abroad and he wanted to go and you know, he actually. Do you remember anything about that?
Well, that's just maybe, but I wasn't aware of that at the time.
Because he was quite a bit older than the rest of you, wasn't he?
Oh, well, you see, when he had 20, 21, anybody who was 30, you know. I mean, I remember one guy, like, he was nearly 40, everybody called him Pop.
Who was that? Can you remember?
Because he was an old man.
Can you remember his name?
It was a Scots book. I don't know his name, it was a Scots book, you know.
Was that unusual to have a man that age in an infantry battalion?
Sorry?
Was that unusual to have somebody that age?
Well, yeah, there were. I suppose the oldest was about 30. You know what, you know.
Now, you had your photograph taken before you went abroad. Do you remember anything about that and how that came about?
Well, I don't know. It must have got us all together and took us a picture, but I can't recall it. I remember having it taken, but how it was organised, I don't know. We probably sat there for some time before we got us all together.
Did you manage to get to see the photograph before you went away?
Yeah, I had one indoors. I got one sent. Had one sent home.
So that had been organised by somebody, and it was.
Yeah, it must have been organised by the company officer, I suppose, or the colonel. It must be the company officer, yeah.
And we'll go over the photograph in detail, you know, when we get a little bit further along. Now, you talked last time about the inspection by the King and how long that took. What else do you remember about the move to Camberley? How did you get to Camberley? Was it road or rail, or how did that work?
I would imagine it was road. I don't. Yeah, it must have been by the road. I can't recall, but I know we left Camberley by rail, I think. Such a long time ago, but there was one guy there, George Jennings, and he did very well. He had just got married, and when he finally got away, he wanted to get the war over quick, and he just dashed the boat, but he had tried to finish the war on his own, and he kept him killed. I think that was the name of Jennings. Another guy was probably the same. Another guy used to say the Lord's Prayer every night at 10 o'clock. And of course it was 10 o'clock at a different time, it wasn't so she was on the castle where it was, where you come from.
And you got to Liverpool.
Yeah.
And describe the process of getting on the troop ship and what you
Well, as soon as you got there, you were just bundled on the boats to get you across the ships, whatever it was. And once you got on there, pulled away from the docks, so you could not get back. You were whatever distance away from the shore, that you had no chance of getting back again.
Now, you'd be talking amongst yourselves. Was there anybody that was thinking of maybe, like, you know, going absent without leave, or...?
Oh, no. Well, before I went abroad, I got a troop ship.
Yeah, what
you process? Well, yeah, there was one guy, a Welsh lad, and he was only Welshman there, and him and I got on quite well, and I said, when he said shut off somewhere, I was covered up for him by making his bed and open things up as if he had been sleeping in his bed and things like that. And till he had to come back in 2 or 3 days' time, and of course he eventually got found out, he'd go into trouble for a while. And then another Welshman come to the company, he dropped me a little hot potato, because Welshmen stick together, which is better.
Can you remember what he was called?
No. Probably Williams, but as they say that, you know, it could be Williams, I don't really know. Because he got called Tappy. You see, well, you got called Scouse, Jody, Paddy, Gitney, or...
But nobody would be called Geordie in the DLI, because there's that many of them.
Unless one word,
unless you were called George.
Yes. Yeah. No, they weren't called Geordie. No.
Did everybody... So everybody... that in your platoon and in your company that you know, everybody actually got on the ship. There was no kind of absentees, there was nobody that...
Not aware of, no.
Yeah.
No.
So, you got on the ship, what were the conditions like? Can you describe where you were and what the accommodation was?
Well, I'd never been on a ship before, I'd only been on Soshu's ferry, to go to Soshu's. I'd never been on a ship before. And yet, I never saw a ship near there, like, you know, my dad used to work on all the ships and things like that. I haven't been on a ship, I was quite impressed by it, but of course when you're so far below, and you say, hey, if anything did that, it couldn't be an awful lot to get up there. And of course, you get up and walk around for a little while, but you got to turn down, chip back again.
So how many decks were you down on the ship?
I'll say about 2 or 3 bucks. And there was some, I had some Lascars. You know the Lascars that sort there. I had some of them on board the ship as well, and when we were going to, when we pulled away, they started squabbling among themselves or something for some reason, and rather than cause any bother, they just got hold of the sail and threw them overboard. That's a true story, son. And I said, yeah, they just threw them overboard, because I suppose I couldn't cause any bother to them with all the guys going forward.
Who threw them overboard?
Well, it must have been the crew of the ship then, I suppose, or the proper captain of the ship, that, you know, who was in charge of the ship.
So, how long were you on the ship before it set sail?
I can't say, only a couple of days, I don't suppose, I don't really know that.
And what was the routine? What did they have you doing?
Well, we're doing fire drill and escape drill and things like that, PT, jumped up and down, things like that. walking round and round and round the ship when you could.
And so you were down in the lower part of the ship. Yeah. What NCOs and officers, where were they? Were they with you, or were they? Who was
it? Must have been a better, could have, must have been better quarter what we were, because the latrines, they weren't toilets as such, but just a long, about 30 foot long or something like that, and you just had to sit there, do your business, and there was seawater running down all the way, so as fast as you had your crap, the water was just blown away and things like that. That's what I remember, you know. So pretty clean that way, you know.
So who was actually given the orders, you know, when you were in the hall? I mean, what was the highest rank of soldier that was with you, do you think?
Only the ones that had corporal and sergeant with us, I should think, yeah.
So that would be
yeah.
like the, maybe the platoon sergeant?
Yeah. And make sure you got tidied up and, you know, smartened up and things like that.
So who was your platoon sergeants at this stage?
It was a Sergeant Dowell. And he was okay, yeah. And we had a George Slater, but I can't remember George Slater going abroad with us, thing.
What about your section leader? Can you remember who that was?
Beveridge. Corporal Beveridge. And we had a Lance Corporal called Corporal Webb, who was a... He wasn't the sharpest knife in the box, I told him, you know. And he could take the beagle.
In what way?
Well, he was an old soldier, and he knew it all, like, and when he tried to get into it, he said, I had to do it more, like, but he just took no damn notes of him at all, you know, going further.
And can you remember the other, you know, you'd be in a section, and there'd be three sections in the platoon. Can you remember anything about, you know, the you know, who was doing what in the platoon? Who were the Bren gunners? Who were the other section leaders? The other Bren, you know, within the 36 men.
Well, McCann was the best shot. He was a Bren gunner. I was called Robinson, I think, or Tom Robinson. Yeah, he was clearly a Bren gun. Three Bren guns, I think, in the platoon, probably because we had three sections, you know. And most people didn't want to carry the damn thing because it was so heavy. And of course, it's a shirk trying to get the job done. But of course, when they come to firing, they were very, very good.
Did you get extra pay for being a Bren gun? Was there like an extra pay?
No.
Did you get extra
work carrying the damn thing?
Yeah. You mentioned earlier the snipers course. Did you get extra pay for that qualification?
No, I don't. I didn't get the extra pay. No.
So were there any kind of specialisations that would give you extra pay? You know, like would give you a little bit extra.
I can't recall anything.
Now, your platoon officer at this stage, who was that? As you went abroad.
That was Lieutenant Dorian.
So it was Dorian. Was it always Dorian all the way through from when you started? Did you have somebody else?
Well, McGregor was involved slightly. But not particularly, we might be two, but sometimes I suppose it's stood in my one guy was doing something else.
What was McGregor like? I mean, we'll talk about when you got into action, but at this stage, what was he like as an officer?
Well, he was just a nice little chap, he wasn't very tall.
Was he Scottish? Or?
Scottish, aye. He was a Scottish lad, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Dorian was a South Shields lad.
And you mentioned Major Hillis.
He came from Hull. He was a really good bloke, he was, I liked him.
What about the other officers? Can you remember anything about them?
Was it Barrington Jones? He wasn't a bad bloke, but he didn't stand for the nonsense all day, but he would always do whatever you had to do, he would do it before you. So, well, I'm not asking you to do anything that I'm not going to do.
And what kind of things would that be?
Things that was pretty hard going, you know, like climbing what? Or running or jumping or assault courses and whatever you went to be through the mill, he would do it.
So he was a fit officer?
He was, yeah. He used to wear thick bottom spectacles and used to look a bit like Harold Royce would really have been dead. But I didn't mind him at all. Like, but
what was Dorian like at this stage as an officer?
Well, Dorian was, I think myself, Dorian was a fella, not running his fella down that way, but used to work in a shoe shop or something like that, you know. Was working in a shoe shop, nothing. But he was trying to get because we were just ordinary, I was a breakdown, the other guys were different. And he was a show shutter, he got sort of came and said the boy because he's an officer. So he tried to sort of keep himself aware and all that, you know. And he was reasonably friendly, but he wanted, you could tell his distance, he wanted to keep apart rather than get involved.
What about his abilities as a soldier? Would he do the thing of Abington Jones do? Would he demonstrate that he could do whatever?
Which one?
Did he have the same style as Babington Jones? Would he demonstrate the assault course?
He would do it, but he wouldn't do it as well. You just do it, full stop. You know. He wasn't a guy who could really muffle it, particularly. I don't know. He wasn't probably being so embittered over there.
Now, you mentioned, you know, his kind of slightly standoffish attitude. Was there anybody like that in the platoon? Anybody that, like, had, you know, thought they were, like, better than, you know, little bit above people, or thought they were. Was anybody like that? Or did you all just mug in?
We all just mugged in. I think I can't say anybody, because the suit got slapped on anyway, that sort of thing. You know?
Now, so apparently the ship set sail on Christmas Day. What do you remember about that?
Yeah, well, I can't remember much about Christmas Day there, but must have got a reasonable being that I don't recall. I can't say anything special on Christmas Day, but on the troop ship anyway.
Were you seasick?
I probably was, yeah, but not very much, not, you know, once you get accustomed to it. Because I reckon if you get in the middle there, you don't get in the middle of the boat, you reckon you don't get as much seasick as that. I don't know. That's one of the main, I don't know.
What did you, do you remember the ship pulled? Did you get up on deck for when it pulled out, when it left Liverpool?
Oh yeah, we did, yeah.
What do you remember about that?
Well, we're so far away, I couldn't just see it. Anybody, when you see these movies and all that, what sort of news is made about these films and all that? The guy, his sweetheart or his wife, has always happened to be there to say hello or goodbye and all that, whereas your parents or whoever you have back home, like, they're nowhere near, you know that. You never see anybody that you see the girls there, or you see these John Wayne things, you go to cinema and all that, and the nurse was there, there's John and Bill and all that. There's a lot of cobblers.
So when the ship left, there was nobody?
No, not from by him,
yeah. There was no band or no kind of?
Well, I could probably played a band in that, you know, I don't know, but no. But people, just we had the people, you wouldn't have a clue they were. You see, because you kept keep the secret, you couldn't tell your parents you're going to go with your girls and all that. You know?
Now, you mentioned that you did write a letter where you said, you mentioned the movie.
Yes.
Where was that written from? Was that written from when you were on the ship or before you left? Or?
I must have been on the ship. And I knew every letter gets censored. And a picture called Algiers with Charles Boyer in it. So I said something about the Charles Boyer movie, it's popular. I don't know if I put the word Algiers, not that, I don't know. But I was hoping to give a clue to my parents, but my parents weren't film buffs like I think that's where I was and that. So whether they took it or not, I don't know. Whether they got through it or not, I don't know.
Had anybody officially told you that you were going to North Africa, or was that just what everybody assumed?
We didn't get a note to go on board a ship.
Yeah. And how did they? Can you remember how that happened? I mean, was there a special briefing or a talk from the officer or whatnot?
Well, it must have been well on the way there before we landed, you know. And I tell you what, when we landed, seeing the beautiful views of first class and all that, when we got to land, like, from distance, as we got near, it was this stinking old place, you know, with not very clean and that sort of thing, but from a distance, you know, silver shining and that. Well, quite impressed.
Now, were there any special talks, any special training on the ship, as you were?
No, but you got trained for the gas. No, I can't recall any special. No, just keep fit exercises, basically.
Did they give you any kind of advice about how to deal with the local population and also the French? Because obviously it was a French colony there. Was there any advice that they?
Well, if they did, I can't recall it.
Anything else about the troop ship, any other memories of? I mean, you mentioned off the tip, there was an incident. Can you describe that? A U-boat scare, can you describe that?
The officer?
A U-boat scare.
the U-boat scare, certainly. I'm hard hearing, just isn't. Yeah, we had training, so that when you had an alarm, or at least you should just walk up the stairs and just everything worked smoothly and all that. When the actual alarm went off with a genuine move, the U-boat alarm, there was a mass panic. Everybody was trying to get up the stairs together. And the ones that was above trying to get past, the ones that was at second deck and all that. And those guys trying to come down to get up, whatever they had. And of course, well, there must have been some sound of it, let us know. It was all over, so things got back to normal again. But all the only things that said, be persecuted, walk up, be calm, and walk down calm. It didn't work that. The only one scared I was aware of.
What was the U-boat alarm? What was it? Was it a bell or a buzzer or what?
It must have been a buzzer of some kind, because it had a loud one.
Did you have a life jacket? Did everybody have a life jacket?
No.
So the ship pulled into Algiers. Mm-hmm. What happened then? What was your impressions of Algiers?
Well, I thought it was great, but until we got there, I wasn't very impressed once we got there. But my goodness, that's where you had to march to whatever place we went to. But just, of course, you can hit this amazing career and things like that.
Well, how long was the march?
It was taking a long march because Mackay, the hardy guy that I was with all the time, he duffed out on the march. And there was a few dead. And then we carried on. And Mackay dropped out here. And the destination was only about called by further on. So I had to go back and drag him there and all that, you know. Because really, you had a lot of gear, you know. All your gear that could possibly carry.
What do you have? Could you describe?
What have I said, and whatever, the marine loaded and that, you know.
So you're carrying your rifle as well?
I suppose you would do, yeah.
And your small pack and your large pack?
That's right.
And your pouches and your steel
helmet? So that was it.
And so you literally marched straight off the troop ship?
More or less, yeah.
What about the officers and the NCOs? Did they march with you?
Well, I suppose some of them must have done that. Yeah, I guess I must have done that. I'll sort of go ahead and sort of prepare for your life.
Because, I mean, earlier you talked about Colonel Ware being very keen on marching, but then disappeared in his jeep.
He never used to march. Now, at least if he marched anyway, I couldn't recall marching.
Now, did he give any kind of talk? Either before the troop ship sailed or when it landed, did you have any contact with him? You know, the general mass of soldiers.
Well, Colonel Ware.
Yeah, I mean, did he give any kind of presentations or talks or?
Well, before the we got inspected by the King, he said the King was very disappointed he couldn't go with us and like that. Well, guys, I'm sure you could go in my place, but you would get that. And we did back in England, of course, we did some special exercise. I've done about a couple of 110 miles in a week's exercise and all that, you know, all the different regiments. And when the exercise finished, they'd write, or finish all over, you go about the headquarters, you know, but, you know. Everybody got in the truck and got took home, but the day lies, we're not petrol feet, we've got to walk back. So we had to walk back, and they just went in the jeep and drove away and all that. But yeah, he was, you know.
So when you got to Algiers, did all the other units that were on, did everybody just have to march off the ship?
Oh. Well, there's probably some people had to go to headquarters, the way you had to land and get organised for the turning up meeting. But the best part of the Bloods, as far as I know, was I can't recall anybody not marching.
So you were marching a long distance. What were your impressions of the locals of this area that you were marching through of Algiers?
Basically, it was quite dark, son. It was really, yeah. It was dusk, I'd say, till it got dark, you know.
Were any of the locals trying to sell you things, or the people were talking about, you know, buying oranges and dates and things? Was that?
No, I don't think it'd be allowed to associate with us. We're probably all that sort of thing started once we arrived there.
So you went on this long march. Where did you
go? I'd say 12 miles, but probably 15 miles, I don't, you know.
And what was there when you got to, what did you get to? Where was the place that you got to? What was actually there?
It must have been just a hood or something, you know, or a shed. I can't really recall. But there was nothing very special about it.
And how long you were this? How long were you at this place?
Must be there 2 days. We got just stuck up there, different parts there. We went to a place called Green Hill, was it?
Oh, that was when you got to the front line.
Yeah, but it was place. We went up very far from there, you see, sir. It was a place called Eucalyptus and Mason Curry and something else. I don't know how far they were from the front line. But once we got to the front, the front line was there as far as 3 or 4 miles, a couple of miles away, I suppose. We went here and we had to dig in and dig these slit trenches and things like that. And we got our grub there and had a bit of a cook, or something, cook the grub. Roughed, sort of grub. And these trenches, I was about 6 foot, I suppose, and one of the guys with me was about 5'2". He was a back as well, and he was a back. And he was in a slit, like I said, slit trenches, of course. Went on the hill, the slit trenches, it was poured rain, the slit trenches got full of water. And I don't have to do something when I got back. He had to have his biscuit tin to stand on so he could see over the top of the slit. When I got back to the slit trench, we were sitting in the slit trench, sitting on the biscuit tin, up his waist in water there, shivering like. We had a bit of joke about that sort of thing. It wasn't very funny, that, you know. And I was there, I got a bivouac with Sergeant Bill Greaves, when I was the same bivouac. And that was just off the hill, so we didn't get damp, you know. It was nothing but bivouac, nothing special, but just sort of a bit, small thing for 2 men to get in.
Would that be a tent?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Can you just describe what this front line was, what it looked like? You know, you were on a hill.
Yeah.
And could you just describe what your hill looked like and what the German hills held, or the Axis hills looked like, and how far you were from the enemy and how far you were from the...
It must have been quite a distance away, but we started going on patrols, you know, and we went on a patrol one time, and there was this guy, he was saying, there was a lot of people called Mac, McNeil, Mac, Mackay, or Mac, and things, and this Mac, he had phoned the place, had to stay there and watch what was, and he happened to come back and make sure the guards were, you know, while we were on a patrol. Well, about 7 or 8 of us went on this patrol to penetrate the German line as much as we could to see what was happening. And of course, you went there and you're very, very quiet and looking around and all that, and that, you know. And we got through the Germans and we saw the Germans actually. It was midnight, dark, very dark, and that, and come back. And if you come back to go down to our base where the rest of us were, so the Germans had the patrol walking through our lot. And of course, we all lads were lying on sitting up. They just walked straight through these Germans and all that. And so we panicked, Benedict, stood there like, we let them all get away. And they walked down. And there was this guy that was on guard, sitting on the stump of the tree, with his gas cap pinned over his head like this. He's been asleep. So he says, hey, you know. Says, do you realise the Germans have just walked up there? Because I thought it was a Sergeant Major. He scared the Sergeant Major's bike. And he wasn't the Germans walking through. He said, oh, I thought it was a Sergeant Major. Hell of a thing he was.
Now, you on these patrols, how would you volunteer for these patrols, or would you be part of...
Well, you got detailed.
How many men would be on a patrol?
About, you had different sections, and if you one section would do one time, things you got probably about 7 or 8 of his go.
And what weapons?
An NCO or something with you.
What weapons would you take on the patrol?
We'd just take a rifle, Tom, as late as you could, and all that, you know.
So you wouldn't be taking the Bren gun?
Oh, no. Basically, to look safe, basically.
And would they... What was the purpose of the patrol? It was to observe, it wasn't actually...
To try and find out another case, we were on the patrol one time. And we took this guy with us, and I think his name was Wilson. So we went so far, now you see you're going to do about 3 or 4 miles, whatever it was, that, you know. And we sent to Wilson, or somebody sent to Wilson, stay there, we'll come back. You know, didn't.